Just talking here before the actual start of the broadcast about the concept of collectability. You know, they brag nowadays. They collect them all. But, you know, examine, ladies and gentlemen, at your leisure, on your own time, if you will, what it is, the fullness of the scope of things that people collect. String? Yeah, you've seen people with big string collections, haven't you? Balls of string? They collect it. But it's now sort of a mark of quality. It's collectible. But, you know, it's like back in the 90s when we worshiped at the shrine of the great god Attitude. Hey, he's got attitude. Well, what is his attitude exactly? Is it it's attitude. It's edge. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, right here at the top of the broadcast, collect this. There will be no sky marshals on British aircraft. Yeah, it's you thought we were in a new era, and we are, but it's so much like the old era, you really have to squint. Armed guards will not be put on British aircraft to protect passengers from terrorist attacks, according to the government, the British government, that is. It's quietly dropped the proposal for sky marshals, announced by the Transportation Secretary right after 9/11, in the face of fierce resistance from, provide your own drum roll here, British Airlines. American Airlines, not the company, the actual collective group of them, have chosen to use sky marshals, but according to a senior transportation official in Britain, the airlines have no appetite for armed guards on British planes, and we have recognized that. The consensus seems to be that we should concentrate on improving security checks on the ground. I see, it's either or. Okay. And we're doing, we have some sky marshals. British Airways is strongly opposed to armed guards, and it was very concerned that terrorists could seize the guards' guns and use them on any passengers or crew who resisted their attempts to hijack an aircraft. Overpowering the sky marshals is their fear, then. But the sky marshals only make themselves known in the case of a terror. One airline executive said that hijackers could easily identify an armed guard, even if he was disguised as aircrew, and added, a determined hijacker would only have to hit him from behind. I'm not even going to read this, because it would give information to, oh, they know all this. Privately, come on in. It's private. Airline senior managers admitted that the astronomical cost of putting armed guards on all aircraft was also a factor. See, it's much more comfortable in here where it's private. It feels more truthful, doesn't it? Last night, aviation specialists criticized the decision not to use sky marshals. The editor of Aviation Security International, whatever that is, said, "We need well-trained armed guards on our planes." That's Philip Baum. He says he's worried that the British government and the aviation industry might be putting too much faith in new technology. No! Technology always works. Passenger groups welcome the decision to concentrate on ground security. Where would the guards for all those flights come from? Who would pay? Says a spokesman for the Air Transport Users Council. The British Transport Secretary said that specially trained air marshals could be issued with weapons, including pistols that could kill a hijacker without piercing the aircraft's skin. A spokesman for British Airways said, "We prefer to concentrate our efforts on making sure that nothing dangerous gets onto our aircraft." British Airways has introduced pre-boarding shoe checks on passengers. The airline is also considering installing closed-circuit television so that pilots and cabin crew can monitor passengers' behavior. Hello, I'm on closed-circuit television. In this country, the FAA has received thousands of applications to become federal air marshals. Declined to say how many marshals were on its payroll or in training, a spokesman said, it's a very secret program. Hey, just like this one, just like hello, welcome to the show.
Here we go. mwanyangwa vuba mwende muni ya mwadibongo kwande wani penya penya na tena wokoba lo sento lambo wenge lo mende singa miango Inawo abona yumano sengi pon Nimba nipon nawo Nyango mititi bembo pa Chidu nimba nipon nawo Namala wimba nawo Uumba olunge bisoga Tete mona sori benga Mamboomba Dinyaka na manyolo lende ndolo Mamboomba Benbe jedi ba mwene kumbomba Mamboomba Bimene leye biso lambo nuku Kujura plana kungona Ndari chungiru Kujura plana kungona Ndari chungiru Out of two
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the first edition of Le Show for 2002. Last palindromic year, 1991. Next one, 2112. So this would be the last palindromic year that, unless they figure out that DNA thing very, very, very quickly. By the way, speaking of airport security, I think this program will now willy-nilly serve as a repository, as a collection point for anecdotal evidence about the new state of air security. Because nobody's collecting this stuff, and it only exists as anecdotal evidence because it's different everywhere. For example, this week, somebody told me they'd just flown, and I said, were they checking shoes? The person said, no, just boots. Really? Since Richard Reed, the alleged guy who had explosives on his footwear, was wearing sneakers, good idea to check only boots. You see what I'm saying? So anomalies, anecdotal anomalies of the airport security regime welcomed here. But we're getting back to normal. Supermodel actress Naomi Campbell. See, just that phrase alone, doesn't that give you a warm feeling of nothing has changed, really? The idea of the occupation supermodel-actress alone has just such warm colors of nostalgia and American-ness written all over it. So we're back. Supermodel actress Naomi Campbell is leasing a Beverly Hills home at $20,000 a month with an option to buy at just under $3 million. Gee, $20,000 a month? Somebody do the math. The house behind gates has four bedrooms and about 5,000 square. Come on out, Naomi. What are you hiding from? Tear down the... Mr. Gorbachev, tear down those gates. In about 5,000 square feet, the home also has a pool. Campbell has been keeping an apartment in the Tribeca area of New York City. And in December, she also rented a two-bedroom flat overlooking the Thames in London, sources said. Wow, she's tri-coastal. Tri-coastal supermodel actress. The high-rise complex with gym and tennis courts. Which high-rise complex? Now I'm confused. I see, in Britain. With gym and tennis courts was completed last year, according to the British press. Campbell was born and raised in London, so she's entitled. She was the first black woman on the cover of French Vogue. Now, I think, you know, the distinctions are getting... We're slicing them a little thin. I'm not knocking it, but the first black woman on the cover of French Vogue. Okay. Since then, her acting career has largely taken a backseat to modeling. Who would have figured that? She's also... She studied ballet. Bing. Actress Crystal Bernard, who co-starred in the sitcom Wings, has sold her Beverly Hills area home in the mid-$4 million range. The home has six bedrooms and 10,000 square feet behind gates. Miss Bernard, tear down those gates. The home on more than an acre also has a pool and a motor court. She put her home on the market about a year ago so she could buy a smaller home here and a place in Nashville. She's a country and western singer and songwriter as well as an actress. Who knew? It's hyphened its day at Hot Property, I guess. That's it. That's all the Hot Property there is for now, ladies and gentlemen. But in the rush to normalcy, there will be so much more. So very soon. Meanwhile,
we're so sorry.
Apologies of the week. We're just getting so much more sorrowful, I guess, since 9/11. It's made us a more sensitive country. I don't know. I really don't understand the phenomenon, but it may just be. Hello? It may just be that I'm on the lookout for it. But here it is this week. This is a good one this week. The historian Stephen Ambrose acknowledged over the weekend that he had copied sentences and phrases in his best-selling book, The Wild Blue, from another historian's earlier work. He apologized and said the repetition had been inadvertent. And please read my new book, which copies virtually all of the phrases and sentences from Stephen Ambrose's. I don't know how it happened. I have no idea, and it must be an act. It must be just the fact that his book was sitting next to the word processor and copied itself in. I have no... In a column in this week's issue of the Weekly Standard, owned by Rupert Murdoch, the executive editor Fred Barnes accused Ambrose of borrowing passages from Thomas Childers's 1995 book, The Wings of Morning, without adequately acknowledging his debt. Childers, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, said that he, too, had noticed the echoes of his own words. Both books tell the stories of airmen flying bombers in World War II. Ambrose credits The Wings of Morning in a footnote as a source of information, but there are no quotations, and the footnote does not acknowledge taking words or phrases. It's our first Greatest Generation scandal, ladies and gentlemen. Greatest Generation takes a dive. Ambrose declined to comment directly. On Saturday, his son and agent. Well, there you go. Enough said, department, but what do you think? His son and agent, Hugh Ambrose, explained that Stephen Ambrose had agreed to give a television program an exclusive interview on the subject. Well, that's a good way to capitalize on your own plagiarism. But no, instead he issued a statement through a spokesman for his publisher, Simon & Schuster. Dr. Childers is correct, Ambrose said in his statement. I made a mistake, for which I am sorry. It will be corrected in future editions of the book. The spokesman for Simon & Schuster said the passages in question will appear in quotation marks in future editions. told of Ambrose's apology. Childers said, "I think it is a classy thing to do, and I appreciate it." He added it was consistent with his impression of Ambrose as a fellow historian. After the publication of his book, Childers said he received a letter from Ambrose praising the book. "I liked it so much, I copied it." No, that's not what he said. He said it, but he said it inadvertently. How do you ladies and gentlemen, it's just all going to be taken at face value because he's a best-selling historian. I guess so. I mean, you do know that even now, even in the modern era, books do not pass from an author's hand straight through to the printing press unexamined by any other set of eyes or brains. Do they? Nobody said, "Hey, Steve, you know, this sounds familiar." Oh, Steve said, "Yeah, I said it on TV." Yeah, that's where you remember it. But, no, okay, anyway, Stephen Ambrose apologized and said it was inadvertent. Meanwhile, no apology from Fox News Channel. They say this week, war correspondent Geraldo Rivera made an honest mistake in his reporting of a friendly fire incident in Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make the same mistake right now. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing at the very spot where Geraldo Rivera slept last night. Well, actually, I'm a few hundred miles away. Well, actually, a few thousand miles, if you're really counting all the zeros in the measurements. But I'm here, and I'm crying at the thought of being here. Sort of what he did. He said he was at the site of the friendly fire incident where three Americans were accidentally killed. He said he stood on the sacred ground and said the Lord's Prayer. But he wasn't. He was hundreds of miles away. The network said it had accepted Rivera's explanation, though I don't think they shared the explanation with us. Planned no further action. He said, here's what Rivera said. He had walked over the spot where the friendly fire took so many of our men, three, and the Mujahideen yesterday. It was just the whole place, just fried, really, and bits of uniforms and tattered clothing everywhere. I said the Lord's Prayer and really choked up. He was hundreds of miles away. He later said he had witnessed the aftermath of a different incident where two Afghans were killed in Tora Bora, no Americans, and he'd confused the two cases in his mind. It was unclear exactly what he had seen. That Tora Bora incident supposedly happened 3 days after Rivera made his report. He was interviewed on Fox News Channel on Thursday and repeated his basic expression that, as he told the Washington Post, the allegations that he lied were hideously absurd, and the time has come to stop the Geraldo bashing. I don't think so. Not yet. He's still going to find at least Mullah Omar. He's going to open Mullah Omar's cave, and Al Capone is going to be in there. That's the irony. The U.S. military had no record of a friendly fire incident in Tora Bora on the day that Rivera reported. A Fox News Channel statement said network executives had reviewed the tapes of Rivera's work and concluded it was an honest mistake. Based on Geraldo Rivera's 30-year track record, well, the chair fight on his daytime show and finding Al Capone's vault, that track record, is that the one we're talking about? Continuing, Fox News has full confidence in his explanation and journalistic integrity. This is not the first, nor will it be the last, mistake made in a war zone. The network has no plans to discuss the incident on the air, according to a spokesperson, although they did invite, as I say, Geraldo on to swing at some softballs. So an apology and a non-apology this week, ladies and gentlemen, in our Apologies of the Week segment. It's a copyrighted feature, as is everything on this program, really, when you stop to think about it, because copyright holding is getting more powerful by the day. Universal Music Group has just released the first CD that you can't play on your computer. It's a music CD. It's a soundtrack from some movie. And this is the first time they're doing this. They're releasing a CD designed not to be playable on your computer to make it harder for you to make copies of it. Next stop, of course, you have to pay every time you want to listen to it. But don't believe me. Now, this is news we missed because it happened in the wake of certain things, so it's important to go back, retrace our steps, and make sure that we're up to speed. This is from the Miami Herald. More than 100 members of, and see if, raise your hands as soon as you detect the first bit of irony, okay? More than 100 members of Burger King's marketing department walked barefoot over an 8-foot strip of glowing white-hot coals as part of a corporate bonding experience at the Ocean Reef Club in Key Largo. That's right, they char-grilled the burgers and the marketing department's feet. Firewalking was supposed to show them that by reaching beyond their limits, they can achieve things they never thought possible. In fact, about a dozen Burger King employees suffered at least first and second degree burns on their feet. We certainly didn't intend for that to happen, a Burger King spokesman said. One woman was taken to the emergency room. Burger King brought in a doctor to treat the others whose feet were blistering. Some were in such pain they used wheelchairs the next day when they went to the airport to leave for another team retreat. Everyone who participated was required to sign a waiver acknowledging there was the possibility of getting burned. Sounds like most record deals. You're walking over hot coals and something can happen, said Robert Cork Callen, owner of the Achievement Group, which ran the event for Burger King. That's right, his nickname is Cork. The majority of the people get through it without a nick or a blister. When you see over 100 people and only 10 to 15 people have blisters, I don't term that unusual. That would be a 15% blister rate. All right then. I wish it didn't happen, said Callen, who has been firewalking since 1992 and operates his company from Philadelphia and Miami Beach. Some people, he added, just have incredibly sensitive feet. Apparently, by his own figures, about 15% of the population. As a certified instructor, and let's give a thought to those wonderful folks, those hardworking folks who certify firewalking instructors. Who does that? Who certifies that? State Office of Firewalking Inspection. Callen has led thousands of participants over coals that can be as hot as 1,200 degrees. His clients have included the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce and the Eden Rock Hotel. Despite the injuries, Burger King executives termed the event a success. It was a great experience for everyone, said Dana Friedman, Vice President of Product Marketing for Burger King. Friedman was one of those injured, but she has no regrets. It made you feel a sense of empowerment and that you can accomplish anything, she said. She said the pain in her feet had subsided. Mildred Morse, Burger King's Assistant Vice President of Diversity, was the person with the most severe burns. She said she was all right and walking, but declined to discuss the severity of her injuries. The firewalking event was the culmination of a day-long retreat designed to help motivate the marketing department's employees for the challenge they face in turning around the struggling Burger King brand. They were also led through a 3-hour program of physical challenges. They used their bare hands to bend spoons. Hey, just call Uri Geller. He's still around. He's at Michael Jackson's place. Break boards and smash bricks. Some bent steel bars with their throats and walked over a board of 6,000 sharp nails. It's all part of the latest trend in corporate team building, just like the Outward Bound programs that were the rage during the 90s. But some have stopped using these adventure techniques, says Bob Preziosi, professor of management with the Wayne Huizinga School of Business at a university none of us have ever heard of. Nobody's ever been able to document that it has any impact on a person's work or the overall performance of an organization, said Preziosi, who specializes in team building and executive leadership. There are people who have little or no athletic skill. They don't feel comfortable with these activities, but they go along with it. He said he would never sanction a firewalking event or ask anyone to participate. The possibility of physical injury, he says, is just too great. Burger King executives agree this was their last firewalking session, except, of course, for the burgers.
I walked in, I sat down, I took my customary look around. I saw a fine young thing heading straight my way, Before I could think of something slick to say, she smiled and sat down and said, yes, you may. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, slapping her cakes on me. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, as any fool could plainly see. She was full of feminine expertise. She was on her toes and I was on my knees. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, slapping her cakes on me. I was mute, I was mum, I was trying not to look too dumb. I said, I certainly hope you won't misconstrue, perhaps we could have a little drink or two. I said, what's your pleasure? She said, guys like you. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, was slapping her cakes on me. She was slapping the cakes on me, my friend, as any fool could plainly see. She grabbed my leg and gave a friendly squeeze. I said, hello, sweetheart. She said, no names, please. She was slapping the cakes on me, my friend, slapping the cakes on me. We walked out hand in hand, exactly as the lady planned. Then I moved in with my smoothest line. I said, look here, woman. I said, what's your sign? She said, later for that, your place or mine. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, slapping her cakes on me. Slapping her cakes on me, my friend, as any fool could plainly see. She was a ruthless master of cool intrigue. She was over my head, I was out of my league. She was slapping her cakes on me, my friend, slapping her cakes on me. Slapping her cakes on me, my friend, slapping her cakes on me. Not to tell you the truth, that's exactly what happened just the other night when this lady started slapping her cakes on me. Slapping her cakes on me.
This is LeShow, wondering how a guy gets the nickname Cork, but I guess we'll have to figure that out for ourselves. So, just as the calendar turned to 2002, and what a splendid New Year's Eve it was. Dick Clark never looked, you know, yes, he did. But he still is there. That's the main thing. It's the there-ness that counts now. Just as the calendar turned, the two major political parties' leaders realized that, oh, my goodness, this is an election year. We'd better get cracking on the speechifying. And so Friday, Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, who apparently is the leader of the Democrats, because Al Gore is, I don't know what Al Gore is doing, ladies and gentlemen. It's really interesting to speculate on what Al Gore has been spending the entire last year doing. We know he taught a course at Columbia for 3 months, and he made an appearance at an Iowa fundraiser in October. That's it. That's what we know about Al Gore's activities. But so Tom Daschle has taken the reins, put the bit in his mouth and run with it. Ouch. And delivered a speech, sort of the kickoff speech of the 2002 campaign, because you can never begin a political campaign too early. And basically blamed President Bush's tax cut for making the recession worse. Didn't blame it for causing the recession, although Republicans have been quick to say that he did. He blamed it for probably, I think he said, making the recession worse. And didn't call for its repeal. Interesting. Then President Bush, who was making some appearances in Oregon and California over the weekend, delivered a response in which he said it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. Now that's got to be, that's just got to be hyperbole. He's got to have heard something funnier than that. I mean, down in Texas, around a barbecue, drunk, back in the days? Must be. Anyway, he said that, and then he said, over my body, they'll raise your taxes. Over my dead body, they'll raise your taxes, is what he said. Over my dead body, they'll raise your taxes. Got a standing ovation. But, yeah, this is George W. Bush saying that. And, of course, the over in Afghanistan, the war continues to be concluded, to be continued. We're still, Mullah Omar has escaped. The other guy has escaped. And now we're distributing pictures. The head of Al-Qaeda. Pictures of him without the beard and dressed in a business suit. He looks a little... I don't know if it's actually him or if they just took an old gag picture of Frank Zappa, because that's what it kind of looks like, that. Anyway, they were dropping leaflets this week, the Defense Department was, of the beardless, business-suited leader of Al-Qaeda, as if to say, have you seen this man? He might look like this now. So we haven't found either of the two most wanted men in the world, but the Afghan provisional government is taking some steps towards powerhood. And a debate rages in Washington as to, okay, what do we do next? It's a situation that might well call for another phone call between a past president and a current one.
Enduring Eaglet. Hey, 43, it's 41. Hey, need to... Enduring Eaglet. Hey, 43, it's 41. Hey, need to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
Where are you?
Oh, Oregon, somewhere. Mm-hmm. On the start of a tough West Coast road trip.
Well,
only do a couple of these a season.
Jeez, I should never have helped you buy that team. Look.
Hey, well, Happy New Year to you. You know, I actually was going to call you when we were back in the friendly confines.
Uh-huh. About what?
No. You first. You called.
No, well, obviously, if my president has a question on his mind, got to be more pressing than whatever it is that...
look, man, you're spreading so much sweet stuff on me, I don't know whether you want to talk to me or barbecue me. I told Karen Hughes that the other day. Cracked her up.
Yeah, well, seriously, my thing can wait.
All right, two things.
Yeah.
First, please... indulge the presidential prerogative. I wanted to hear your problem first. And second, it was Karen Hughes who said that to me. That's what it was. Just wanted to get that straight.
Okay, look. No, your folks wanted to hit back hard at Tom Daschle.
Yes, sir, and I think we did.
Well,
yeah, high school kids make such a great crowd. At least during wartime.
But over my dead body, they'll raise taxes. You said that. Who's the amateurish, tone-deaf rocket scientist on your staff who decided that you should say that?
You know, not to get off the subject here, but you could be a tone-deaf rocket scientist and do just fine.
Switched to irony there. You may have missed it.
Well,
seriously, kiddo, that was a regular... wrong.
What do you mean? Like a hello?
Yeah.
Well, I know what you're thinking, 41. You're thinking, I've forgotten the most obvious lesson to draw from your administration. You're thinking, I've done a no new taxes of my own.
Sure do.
And that it's going to help the Dems in an election year.
I got got to admit, that's what's going through my mind.
Well,
I think that's what any five-year-old would think, seeing that tape. Not bad enough, they show my thing along with yours. There I am, 88, with brown hair.
Hey, you're a rerun, 41. You're golden. It's old-timers day at the park.
Well,
see, I got a pretty good operation going here now. We've done polling, you know. Use of the words, my dead body's very specific. Anything happens to me during the war on terrorism, and at least some of the American people will blame the Dems. See, it's political jujitsu. We're using our own strength against us.
Well, that's, as I say, why I wanted you to go first, because, you know.
Yeah.
You had a question for me?
Yes, sure, I did, and do and does.
Okay.
Bunch of our best minds, you know, Wolfie, Dick Pearl.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just hammering me on, you know, phase two of the war.
Iraq.
Yep. What they're saying to me in just so many other words is that Afghanistan was a hanging curveball over the center of the plate, and sometimes... Dick Pearl said this again to me on Friday night. Sometimes you got to hit the slider, you know. And Saddam Hussein is the slider.
Yeah, makes me nervous to hear you talk like that.
What? What? The baseball imagery seems jejune?
No, just a lack of surprise they're advocating. You know, you've announced a long struggle.
Uh-huh.
You brought the first war in under 3 months. All that time since back when Mullah Omar still had a house. Your best minds have been writing magazine articles and op-ed pieces about going into Iraq.
Uh-huh.
You know, what's Saddam supposed to be thinking? Ooh, nah, we'll go to Somalia next. Well, you know, what's Colin say?
See, I like Colin.
Yeah, Colin's a good man.
Yeah, well, hell, he's a hero.
Yeah.
Not a New York Times hero, but, you know, a hero nonetheless. But, you know, he's almost hinting that we don't necessarily have to have a phase two right away. He's suggesting a one-phase struggle, you know? Little out there.
Little hello.
Yeah.
Well... Look, obviously, this is it's a little delicate for me.
No, I know.
War with Iraq happened on my watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Saddam's still there.
Yeah.
There's that whole thing.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Would you regard a phase two that went into Iraq as a tribute, or would it just seem kind of... You know, closing the barn door on the horse you rode in on.
Good question. Look, isn't there a thing in baseball about letting the game come to you?
Oh, well, sure. You know, a lot of youngsters come to the bigs and they're so anxious to prove themselves. Yeah, they tighten up or they start thinking about what they're doing instead of just doing it. So, yeah,
okay.
They got to learn to let the game come to them. Good days.
Well, Saddam's the game.
Hmm.
You gotta let him walk into your trap.
Yeah.
You don't want to walk into his.
Yeah, yeah. So he's not the slider. He's the game.
Exactly.
Interesting. So, while he might be a very bad phase two, he could still be a viable phase three?
Could be.
Okay.
If it came, you know, after the start of November.
Well, as long as we're waiting that long, might as well wait until after the elections.
That's a very good point.
Okay.
All right, 43, listen,
yeah.
Just want to get back to this.
Uh-huh.
What happens if Tom Daschle does to you what George Mitchell did to me? You know, he waits until you need something real bad. And then he rolls you for the tax increase, and you got sauerkraut all over your face.
Well, our numbers tell us after November, Tom Daschle is not going to be running the Senate. Trent Lott will.
You're that sure of it?
Oh, man, it's a lock. You know, as long as the folks don't think that we've returned to politics as usual...
hence the need for...
A halfway decent phase two, yeah. So...
Well, look.
Yeah.
Maybe Saddam's right. Maybe you do go to Somalia next. Interesting. Okay, I got a lot to think about. I'll talk to you at the start of the next homestand, huh?
Oh, you got it. Mars sends her love.
So does Laura. Bye-bye.
If blood will flow when flesh and steel are one, drying in the color of the evening sun, perhaps the rain will wash the tears away. Something in our minds will always say, perhaps this final act was meant to quench your lifetime's argument that nothing comes from violence and nothing ever could. For all those born beneath that angry star, lest we forget how fragile we are. On and on the rain will fall, like tears from a star, like tears from a star. Flesh and steel are one, drying in the color of the evening sun. Perhaps the rain will wash the tears away. Something in our minds will always say, perhaps this final act was meant to quench your lifetime's argument that nothing comes from violence, and nothing ever could. For all those born beneath an angry star, lest we forget how fragile we are. On and on the rain will fall, like tears from a star, like tears from a star. And on the rain will sing how fast.
how fragile we are, how fragile we are, how fragile we are.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. It's a follow-up about the time machine. You may remember it was a story in the trades I read for you about a television station that was squeezing programming to get more commercial time. Well, time squeeze probe widens, according to Electronic Media. I'll read it for you. The American Association of Advertising Agencies, the 4A's, is expanding its investigation into the use of time machines to create unauthorized extra local ad time on TV stations. This issue has been turned over to the National Broadcast Committee at the 4A's, according to Media Executive VP Kathy Crawford. She says they will also be asking to send a letter to television stations. The message, quote, "We paid for 30 seconds. We expect to get 30 seconds. See, she's voicing concern about a new device in the works from the same people who make the time machine. It's called the Trimmer. Using technology similar to the time machine, it will enable TV stations to trim time from commercials that come into a station too long to fit the available pod slot. How's your pod slot? In other words, if a commercial meant for a 30-second slot arrives with a running time of 32 seconds, the trimmer could be used to reduce the running time by 2 seconds. Says Ms. Crawford, putting such a device into the hands of local TV stations with its potential for abuse is very worrisome. The time machine, manufactured by a company in San Jose, California, allows stations to add extra commercials by analyzing successive frames of a TV signal and looking for two frames that are enough alike that one can be tossed out. 900 frames have to be thrown away to create a 30-second hole. Ms. Crawford had expressed her concerns to CBS about the use of time machines on CBS stations after a Pittsburgh newspaper wrote that KDKA-TV had used the device during a live NFL game on October 14th. And Electronic Media reported that the practice was widespread on other stations as well. Said the ad executive, "We want you to know that program compression is unacceptable," she wrote it to the president of the CBS TV stations group on behalf of the 4A's. Her letter continued, "Our clients' commercials are already running in a cluttered environment. Stations should not compress the program and add more time to the commercial pod, which increases the cluttered environment further. More important," Ms. Crawford wrote, "this Pittsburgh incident also causes concern that this same technology could be used to compress commercials for the same purpose." Fred Reynolds of the CBS Stations Group replied to Ms. Crawford with assurances that "your commercial message has never been tampered with," unquote. The revelations of widespread time machine use sent shockwaves through the advertising world and through the local broadcasting community. Networks strictly forbid affiliates from manipulating network programming to add local ad inventory. "This is not about KDKA," Ms. Crawford said. "This is about 120 time machines out there. It is cause for concern." Thank God the commercials haven't been tampered with yet, though. Some good news to salve our weary consciences, because I read the trades for you. It is a copyrighted feature. You're right about that. ¶¶ making America's consciences feel better. That's what this program is all about. Oh, but this program has come to an end for this week. That's all of the show for this particular occasion. The program returns next week at the same time over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 blanketing the east coast of North America, all over North America on XM satellite radio, and on around the world on your computer whenever you want it. At two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like me being able to pronounce three W's in a row if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.